Hey, your girl is back in the studio. It's me, Carla Renata, a.k.a. the Curvy Film Critic. I got some Tyler Perry. I got a little Maleficent action. We're going to talk about some Jojo Rabbit Nazis. Oh, yeah, and that Deion Taylor's Black and Blue right after this.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Hey, everybody. Oh, my God. So y'all know how I am. I try my best to get these shows up on time when I'm out of town. But technology betrays me every single time. I will get it right one day. But if you missed the Curvy Critic here at Black Hollywood Live last week, please go to the playlist and check it out. I talked about Parasite. I talked about a whole bunch of other stuff. But what I really want to talk about right now, before we get into the reviews of the day, which are Maleficent, Jojo Rabbit, and Black and Blue, I want to talk about this junket that Black Hollywood Live was so kind enough to send me to Chicago, courtesy of NBC, to cover all of their dramas on the NBC Tuesday night lineup, which includes Chicago Med, Chicago PD, and Chicago Fire. They put us on the red carpet. It was a plethora of stars, a plethora of executive producers. I mean, it was so many people. If you want to see the full playlist for that, go right on over to the Black Hollywood Live YouTube channel and you can see all of those right there. But right now, what I'm going to do is give you a little sneak peek into what I asked some of the stars of the show about. And the answers were in regard to these questions. I either asked them what their favorite thing to binge watch was, or I asked them what their bucket list was for their character on the show. So having said that, take it away. Hi, everybody. It's your girl, Carla Renata, with Black Hollywood Live. I'm here on the One Chicago Day press junket carpet in Chicago. I cannot wait for y'all to see all the interviews. Stay right there. Love, peace, and hair grease. Bam!
I'm from New York. Hey!
I lived in New York.
Hey!
You got another one?
My name is Marlene Barrett. I play Maggie Lockwood. You watch Black Hollywood Live.
Thank you, my darling.
No one does crossover like we do.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings kind of tried it. Overrated. We cross over.
Oh, my God.
I think it's like a nuclear bomb that drops in Chicago. And Derek Haas wrote this epic script, and you often wonder, you know, I say to myself, could this really happen? And you're like, yup. If you can imagine it these days, it can happen. So this story begins with this epic problem, and Maggie has to decide if she can be around at all because of her health. But our team gets together like no other. And the difference of this crossover, I would say, when the lines have been more linear, people from Med would stay in Med, people from PD would stay in PD. No, we're everywhere. And you get to see that we are actually intercross in our lives like no other.
No more dragons. I love dragons.
Oh, there'll be more dragons.
I love dragons. I do. Those dragons, you know, when those dragons were little bitty dragons, I was watching the whole show. I didn't even like it, but I was like, they're going to grow up to be very nice dragons.
Oh, I can't.
And they grew up to... And I was like, I knew that.
Marriage and babies.
Boom. I'm going to ditto on that.
Marriage and
babies and a promotion.
You nice. That's right.
Take care of them babies.
Take care of them babies. Got to get them diapers.
I haven't been in a chase.
Ooh, I don't want to be in any more chases.
I bet you want to be behind the desk.
I want to be behind. I was thinking it would be cool if Voight like got shot and has to spend like 10 episodes in a hospital bed.
Oh, so you can just like chill out. Oh, you
well, like I can shoot all 10 in like 2 days.
I think it's important that Trudy goes to Paris. I do.
Trudy goes to
planet Earth.
Ooh.
Yeah, like just it kind of like
deep brother. Look at you.
Yeah, no, it kind of like it like all systems down. Like you just shut off. I like watching nature. I like watching animals. So like I'm a big Planet Earth fan. The guy who narrates it, David Attenborough, is like I don't know. It's like meditation or something. So you can just kind of check out. Like I
want to have an affair. They're like, Herman would never have an affair.
No, that gets them angry when you bring up. But I think I would like to see the temptation.
Yeah.
And see it come really close.
And then Herman can't do it. All right. Maybe if some kind of clothing comes off. Maybe just a titillating moment.
She's just out there a little bit. She's just crazy.
We could see that. Why not? That'd be fun.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd be down.
And finish the sentence for me. On one Chicago day...
On one Chicago day,
thank you. Oh my God, that gives me pure joy every time I watch that clip. When I ask him about one Chicago day, and he's like, yeah. Ooh, pure comedy. But yes, you guys. They had us on the red carpet. The day started at 9 a.m. It ended somewhere about 9 p.m. We interviewed every cast member from Chicago Med, every cast member from Chicago PD, every cast member from Chicago Fire, all of them. Some of them told me what their bucket lists were from the show, like I said, and others told me what they loved to binge watch, and you'd be surprised at the answers to some of those questions. I gave you a sneak peek into it there, but like I said before, you can catch the full playlist of hashtag One Chicago Day over at the Black Hollywood Live site, which is right here in the playlist that says NBC One Chicago Day Red Carpet. They also did a little thing with us that day with the journalists. They gave us an insight into how the actors are trained to do their jobs on those shows, dealing with fire, medicine, and police detective work. So when it came to the fire, they showed us how to break into a room and how to save a life, how to drag somebody out of a fire or a room that's engulfed in fire safely. They showed us how to solve a crime scene based on the physical evidence and the trace evidence in the room. See, I learned a new term, trace evidence. They also showed us how to intubate a patient so that we can go ahead and perform surgery on them so that to clear the airway for them to breathe. Let me tell you something. One of my friends had me cracking up because I said incubate instead of intubate. And she came online and was like, so I think you meant you were trying to intubate a patient. So thank you for that heads up and that correction, because I'm not a medical professional. I didn't know the difference between incubate and intubate, so my bad. But I have that footage up at thecurvyfilmcritic.com where you can see me intubating a patient and damn near killing the person. It's pure comedy. I had so much fun doing it. So thank you again to Black Hollywood Live producers and NBC for that opportunity and that chance to engulf in those worlds and have a chance to talk to all those people. It really was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it very much. All right, so let's talk about a little Jojo Rabbit. Now, I took my mother to see this film, and my mother is hilarious. As I talk about my mother on the show all the time, I always say that I take her to the movie. She's like my permanent plus one for films most of the time. My mother, because the word rabbit was in the title, thought we were going to see an animated film. I know. Pure comedy at its best. But no, Jojo Rabbit is not an animated film. But before I get into it, let me just acknowledge some people. I'm going to shout out Ryan Nielsen. Hey, Rai, and Marlon Wallace, who were in the chat room. I also forgot to mention, let me flip it back a little bit about the whole Chicago hashtag One Chicago Day situation. They're doing a crossover of all three Chicago shows on Tuesday night, happening on October 16th. So that carpet and that junket was in conjunction with the crossover date that's happening on Tuesday night, NBC, October 16th. Please check it out. There's a lot of shenanigans going on, and it's dealing with a threat. I won't say what kind. You'll have to watch it and find out. And I'm back to Jojo Rabbit. So like I said, my mother thought it was an animated movie, and that made me laugh out loud. I was like, I cannot even think that you think we're talking about an animated movie. But it's a movie that is going to be released on October 18th. It's directed by Taika Waititi. It is produced by Fox Searchlight Pictures. It stars Sam Rockwell. Taika is in the title role in the film. And Scarlett Johansson, Rebel Wilson, Thomasin McKenzie, and newcomer Roman Griffin Davis. Now, this film is a tricky film because it's a comedic satire about a young German boy who finds a Jewish girl hiding in his home. And he finds comfort and advice from his best imaginary friend, who is Adolf Hitler. I know, it sounds crazy. And it is crazy. But it's crazy good. I enjoyed it so much because it deals with so many different things that I'll get to in a minute. But I want to just talk about the fact that Taika does these turn. He did a big, huge, sharp left turn into coming of age stories like Boy, vampire movies like What We Do in the Shadows, and even superheroes like Thor Ragnarok. But this film isn't in any of those lanes. It's in a lane all unto itself. It has some Anne Frank references, thus the young Jewish girl hiding in the closet. It has dealing with the Holocaust, naturally, because it's dealing with a certain time frame in Germany where Hitler was in rule and the Nazis were in charge. My favorite part of the film, though, pure comedy, is at the beginning, and this won't ruin anything for you. At the beginning of the film, there's like this whole, it's like a Boy Scout camp for little boy Nazis. Hilarious. Now, let me just preface all of what I'm about to say by saying this. There's nothing funny about Hitler. There's nothing funny about Nazis. There's nothing funny about the Holocaust. But when you take all of those things that are such extremes and you turn it into a comedic satire to make a point about humanity and the differences between human beings, like there's this whole situation where on more than one occasion, the German people in the film, including the little boy, referred to Jewish people as people that have horns on their heads. And as a person of color in this country and a woman, it was so reminiscent of how people talked about black people back in the day when they didn't understand. Like, I remember as a kid, some little children in some areas that I lived in within the United States thought that my color was a choice and that I could rub it off or wash it off. And I remember some little kids thinking that I was just dirty because my skin was brown. So this film resonated with me in a whole different way and light than it's going to resonate with most film critics, because I experienced that injustice and that prejudice and that cruelness through words and through actions simply because I looked different from everybody else. So that's a huge, huge staple of this film. And when you throw comedy on stuff, it kind of drives the point home just a little stronger and a little faster. There's a cartoon illustration that the young boy in the book makes of Elsa, the young lady who's hiding in the attic. There's this book where he makes up this book of her and this boyfriend that she speaks of named Nathan. And at first it starts out where he's just drawing pictures of Nathan because he's kind of mad about Nathan. And when you see the film, you'll see why. But then it turns from that into a whole nother situation. And it turns into these pictures of Jewish people with horns and Jewish people with tails. And it's funny, but it's kind of not, for the reasons I mentioned previously. And at the end of the day, when the war is over and the French come in and the Americans come in to Germany and shut that down and Hitler has killed himself. So I'm not spoiling anything for you because that's historic about Adolf Hitler. We all know he took his own life. What happens is you see this humanity that occurs between Germans and Jews. They learn that they don't have tails. They don't have horns. They're not these mythical creatures wandering the earth that are trying to have devilish means. That none of that is going on. At the end of the day, every human being bleeds red, no matter what color your skin is, no matter whether you're Jewish, whether you're German, whether you're Black, whether you're Latino, whether you're Asian. At the end of the day, if you cut everybody's finger, everybody's blood is red. So that is the humanity lesson in this film. And it couldn't be more timely, especially with what we got going on in this country right here and right now. So again, Jojo Rabbit will be in theaters by Fox Searchlight Pictures, on October 18th, directed, written, and produced by Taika Waititi. So please get to a theater and check that out on October 18th. Whew, I'm tired already. Let me check my peeps and see if anybody has anything to say. Ryan is telling me that Downton's getting only a wide theatrical release. Yes, that's correct. The major theater chains don't play Netflix movies. I'm going to get into that in a minute, Marlon Wallace, when I get into the news. I have something to say about Netflix. And hey, Katya from Cup of Soul Show, welcome back. I love you. Oh, hey, Read Love Listen. Read Love Listen says, I can't wait to hear what you have to say about Black and Blue. I love Naomi Harris ever since Ninja Assassin. Oh, yeah, I got a lot to say about Black and Blue. Trust and believe, I do. All right, so the next one is, as I queued it up, Black and Blue. So, Black and Blue is directed by Deon Taylor. And Deon Taylor, this is what I can say about Deon Taylor. Deon Taylor knows how to make people talk to the screen, because this time he did The Intruder, and Michael Ealy is usually in a lot of his films, but Michael Ealy is not in Black and Blue, I'm sad to say, probably because he's shooting a TV series on ABC called Stumptown. Yeah, that was a plug for his show, because I love Michael Ealy. He knows that. But at any rate, Deon Taylor will have you screaming at the movie screen. Usually when I go to see films, and I've said this before, I'll go multiple times. I'll go with some critics. I'll go with who I feel the target audience is for the film. And then I might just go in one other time just to throw it in for measure if I feel like it. But Black and Blue is one of the films I probably could see it multiple times. But this particular time that I screened it with a bunch of regular Black folk. And baby, when I tell you, folk were cutting up and talking to the screen and carrying on, and I was right there with them. It was fun. It's fun to do that sometimes. Sometimes you just got to step outside of yourself and have some fun. My friend went with me, and he and I were pulling on each other and yelling at each other and talking to each other in the theater. It was just a blast. But Black and Blue is one of those films that it's kind of like a female. If you took Naomi Harris and made her Denzel Washington and put her in Training Day, then that's what this film was. It was kind of like that. And I was there for all of it. I was there for every last single second of it. Naomi Harris, y'all, this chick is bad. But hold on, before I start talking about Naomi, the other stars of the film are Mike Coulter and Tyrese Gibson. And it's produced by Sony Pictures and Deon's production group, Hidden Empire Film. Now, let me get back into talking about Naomi Harris. Naomi Harris, this is how talented and flexible this young lady is. She's gone from playing a crackhead mother in Moonlight to playing Winnie Mandela in Mandela Long Walk Home to being a Bond girl in Skyfall, in addition to Ninja Assassin. Naomi Harris is a bad girl. She is bad. She can play any kind of character in any situation. And what she has to do in Black and Blue, the way she gets thrown around and dropped and kicked and fighting and jumping and hopping over fences, I know she was Black and Blue by the time this film was over. And the film is, it is like Training Day, so it's no surprises there. The plot is very predictable. Most of Deon's films do have very predictable plots, but they always star us as the stars in the movie. And when I say us, I mean Black people. They always star Black people in the films. It's produced by a Black person. So I got to give Deon Taylor credit where credit is due. He know how to make you scream at a movie. He knows how to produce and direct a suspenseful thriller drama. That is his niche. He's excellent at it. And Black and Blue, if you like Naomi Harris, if you liked Training Day and you like that kind of premise, if you love Mike Coulter, if you're a fan of Tyrese Gibson, and if you're a fan of Deion Taylor's films, you will love Black and Blue. But I'm just going to preface it and say, there's going to be some times where you're going to laugh, because there's some laugh out loud moments happening up in there, but they did their thing. It was a really well-executed film, but man, I've never had so much fun at the theater in my life. I really did. I had a lot of fun. And it's produced, again, by Sony Pictures. It's going to be released on October 25th. So that's a couple of weeks from now. I probably will talk about it again. But in the meantime, just be on the lookout for it. Next up on my schedule is Maleficent. Maleficent is a Disney film, and y'all know how I feel about Disney. I love the mouse over here at Black Hollywood Live. The mouse ain't did nothing wrong to me. But I love Maleficent because it features three really strong women: Michelle Pfeiffer, Elle Fanning, and my girl Angelina Jolie. Y'all, I love me some Angelina Jolie. Like, I see all of her movies. I even saw the movie that she directed that I think was called Unbroken that nobody liked, but I loved it. And I loved it because she took her talents behind the camera and she was good at it, but people weren't just recognizing her because she was a woman. But that's going to change. I'm going to put that out there that that's going to change. But this film was directed by, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, Joachim Rønning. And it's a follow-up to Maleficent that was released a little while ago. Maleficent is the evil character from the Sleeping Beauty saga from Disney. And this time when we meet Maleficent, she and her goddaughter, Aurora, who is being played by Elle Fanning, they begin to question the complex family ties that bind them as they're pulled in different directions by Aurora's impending nuptials. So what's happening is Aurora falls in love with the prince, who's a human. Aurora is not human. Maleficent is not human. Well, Aurora is human, but Maleficent is not human. And so she's a bird, and she raised a human because she raised a human. She just loves Aurora as her own daughter and raised her as one of her own. And Chiwetel Ejiofor is also in this film. What I will say about Maleficent is I love that it was a dark fairy tale. I love that these three strong women in the film were not fighting over each other. They weren't fighting over each other. They weren't fighting each other over a man. They weren't fighting each other over anything else other than the love of their country and the love of their sons and their daughters. I loved that premise. I can't even remember the last time I saw a film where women were not fighting over a man. So kudos to Disney for putting that lesson out there for young girls that go see this, because they will totally get it. There's some smart cookies out there. They will totally get it. The costumes are absolutely gorgeous. Angelina Jolie's costumes are ridiculous. They are ridiculous, ridiculous, ridiculously gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous costumes, and everything fits her like a glove because she's very svelte and very tall and thin and lean, and she just looks fabulous in everything that she wears. I love those costumes. And side note, somebody that we had here as a guest a while ago, Philip Boutte Jr., who also worked on Black Panther, also worked on the costumes for Maleficent. So hopefully at some point in time when award season gets up and running, we can coax him into coming back over here to tell his story about working with Angelina Jolie. And I don't want to tell that story for him because it's a fabulous story and I would rather him tell it, but he did tell it to me, so I am privy to the news. So that's Maleficent, and I highly suggest that you go see it. It's a wonderful film. Disney knows how to do those fairy tales and those big extravaganza movies like nobody else. They just really put their foot in it, and they put their foot in this. So again, Maleficent is going to be released on October 18th. It is produced by Walt Disney Studios. It is starring Michelle Pfeiffer, Elle Fanning, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and Angelina Jolie. Now, let's see, what else? Hey, Marcus Terry, how are you? Good to see you too. Read, Love, and Listen says to me, I love those type of movies where you get invested in the story. Naomi is everything. I watch anything with her. I liked the movie Traffic, so I'm sure this will be good. Yeah, Read, Love, Listen. If you love Traffic, you will definitely love Black and Blue. No doubt about it. All right, let's talk about this party that Tyler Perry had last week. Y'all, Tyler Perry had this party last week in Atlanta, and I talked about this last week, but if you missed it, I'm just going to recap it real quick because it warrants being recapped. Tyler Perry had this party in Atlanta to celebrate his reopening of Tyler Perry Studios. It is 330 acres. Every movie studio in Los Angeles can fit inside Tyler Perry Studios. That's how large and how massive the grounds are. So I'm guessing a whole lot of people going to be flying to Atlanta to work and produce some projects because it's cheaper there. The tax cuts are better there than they are in LA. It's really expensive to shoot here nowadays. And so a lot of times, a lot of TV shows and a lot of movies, they take their productions elsewhere to Canada. But hopefully they won't have to go to Canada. No shade to Canada. But hopefully they won't have to do that. They can just go to Atlanta and rent from the Tyler Perry Studios. We had Angela Robinson here at Black Hollywood Live. Her and I go way back to our Broadway days, and Angela Robinson plays Veronica on The Have and the Have-Nots, and I'm bringing up her name in conjunction with this story because Tyler Perry, that same week that he opened the studios in Atlanta, was bestowed a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame here in Los Angeles with a plethora of famous people that we all know. So to give back to the people who have so graciously given their talent or lent their talent to his projects, he graciously gave them a star to be permanently cemented and permanently acknowledged on the Tyler Perry Studios lot. And Angela Robinson, who we've had over here at Black Hollywood Live, was one of those people. So I just wanted to give her a big, what's up, girl? I'm happy for you. What? Crystal Fox, who I acted with on The Have and the Have Not, she got a star. Renee Fleming. Oops, not the opera singer. Oops. But everybody that was a series regular or is a series regular on any Tyler Perry show, any Tyler Perry movie, they all have their stars on the pavement at Tyler Perry Studios, and everybody was emotional. I saw footage and photographs of people crying and just overwhelmed at the honor. So I just wanted to give a big shout out to Mr. Perry, a big shout out to all of the stars of all of the shows at Tyler Perry Studios, Have and the Have-Nots, Meet the Browns. The list goes on and on and on, but congratulations to everybody there. Tika Sumter, congratulations to you too. That's my girl. I love her. But yeah, it's a big deal, and that's a big deal for us as a people. So I cannot be here at Black Hollywood Live without talking about that and acknowledging that. And I will talk about it and acknowledge it every little chance I get because it's awesome. It is the bomb. So there's that. I talked about Parasite last week, and Parasite is dominating the box office, y'all, with an estimated gross of $376,264 and an average per screen of $125,421. That makes it the highest grossing release in 2019, now making it rank as the 18th highest per screen average of all time and the 8th highest per screen average for all live action films. And the record breaking doesn't stop there. And I'm not going to tell you where it stops, but you'll have to find out. But I just had to acknowledge that because Parasite, again, is directed by Bong Joon-ho. It's written and directed by him. And this is a film that features a predominantly Asian cast. So the fact that this film is killing it at the box office this weekend is absolutely amazing. It's right up there with The Farewell starring Awkwafina. So happy for Awkwafina and I'm just happy for everybody. But yeah, and Parasite was previewed to sold out houses in New York and in LA. So if you have not checked out Parasite, please go and check it out. It is a fantabulous film, and it's dealing with the issues of greed and wealth and caste and class. So, you know, we all know what that is in this country right now. So check it out. It'll be really something to see. Speaking of Awkwafina, Variety magazine had their Power of Women honorees that they bestowed an honor upon this weekend. Those women were Jennifer Aniston, Awkwafina, Mariah Carey, Chaka Khan, Brie Larson, and Dana Walden. And baby, I saw some footage. I think it was on YouTube, or I don't even remember where I saw this footage, but I saw some footage of Mariah Carey on the red carpet, and Diane Warren was standing there. Diane Warren is a famous Grammy-winning, Oscar-nominated composer, and she was standing on the red carpet with her phone taking selfies or doing some footage, and she stepped in front of Mariah Carey to do it, and Mariah Carey took her and shoved her off to the side. Oh, I remember where I saw it. Diane Warren posted it on her Instagram page. Baby, I laughed out loud. So if you have not seen that, go to Instagram, go to Diane Warren's Instagram page, and you will see that footage. It is pure comedy. But that aside, congratulations to those ladies on their honor of being a power woman by Variety. Also wanted to mention, we lost one of the great ones this weekend, Robert Forster. He died at 78 years old. This man had appeared in over 100 motion pictures, including his Oscar-nominated turn as Max Cherry in Quentin Tarantino's Jackie Brown. My personal favorite film of his is one that I talked about here. It was either last year or a year before last. It was a film that he did with Blythe Danner called What They Had, and it was dealing specifically with the issue of Alzheimer's. And Blythe Danner was the one that was affected, and he played her husband. And usually when we see these stories, we show how the victim is being, we don't ever really see how the family and the victim is being affected, or the person that is losing their mind is being affected, but they showed it from all vantage points. And that was a really wonderful film. I love that movie. It was called What They Had. And then Forster, before he passed away, he had completed 3 additional projects this year: El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie, which is streaming right now on Netflix, Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories, and Werewolf. So at least we have 3 more projects to check him out in, and all his other work that preceded his passing on. But I did want to acknowledge that, because he was an exemplary actor. He was a consistent actor. He was a really nice man. And our prayers go out to his family and his friends. So I'm going to check in with the chat room one more time. What y'all have to say now? Hi, Mark. Oh, you're from Richmond. Okay, Richmond. Parasite won the Palme d'Or. Yes, it did win the Palme d'Or at Cannes Film Festival. And it probably will be one of the first Korean films nominated for an Academy Award. But we also have Awkwafina. We also have The Farewell. So that's going to do really well during Oscar season too, I think. Parasite. No, Parasite is not a horror movie, Michael B. Welcome, Michael B. No, it's not a horror movie. It's a movie about Parasite. Let me just recap what Parasite is. Parasite is a film it's dealing with a Korean family that is unemployed, and one of the son in the family has another friend who is a tutor for this other family that's really wealthy. So he goes out of town, and to try to keep his job in place, he asks his friend, the one who's in the unemployed family, to tutor this girl. The unemployed family ends up going into the house and taking over the wealthy family's house. And I know that sounds like a really complicated explanation, but the movie is complicated. But it deals with the whole situation of class and greed. There's one moment in the film, I said this once before, there's a moment in the film that struck me to my core, where the wealthier man in the house complained about how the unemployed man smelled, like he smelled like poverty. And that struck me to my core, because that's an awful thing to say to any human being, especially somebody that isn't doing well financially and struggling just to make ends meet. But that film is dealing with class, it's dealing with greed, it's dealing with all types of different issues, and it's definitely worth a take. But no, it is not a horror film. Yes, so that is that. So next week, you guys, the next couple of weeks, I have some really great things going on that I want to tell you about. Next week, I will talk about The Lighthouse. I will probably talk about Addams Family, since I didn't get a chance to see that this week, and Motherless Brooklyn. And then the week after that, I'm going to talk about a film that I saw at Sundance called Burden, which stars Crystal Fox, who I mentioned from the Have and the Have Nots at Tyler Perry Studios. Harriet, we've been talking about Harriet here for a minute. I showed an interview when I came back from the Toronto International Film Festival with Cynthia Erivo, who also is going to be playing Aretha Franklin in the Genius television series for National Geographic. So I have an interview with her and some other people from the cast and creatives that I will share with you at that time. The Irishman, which is the new Robert De Niro, Al Pacino movie. The Terminator, The Kingsman, and Waves. So October 27th is going to be a jam-packed week. And the week before that, like I said, The Lighthouse and Motherless Brooklyn. If this is your first time joining me at The Curvy Critic, please go to the YouTube channel, where I'm sure you're watching this right now, and give me a big old thumbs up to let me know you were here. If you're listening to this on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or any of those other platforms, please leave me a comment. Let me know what you love. Let me know what you don't, so that I can gear this show towards you, because if there were no you, there would be no me. And yeah, that kind of does it for this edition of The Curvy Film Critic with Carla Renata. You guys can find me across all social media platforms at The Curvy Critic. All the films that I review here on air, you can also find the written version of them at thecurvyfilmcritic.com. You can find me right after this at AfterBuzz TV talking about General Hospital. That's my show, GH, with the GH Report with my boy Frank Moran. And on Monday nights, you can catch me again at AfterBuzz TV talking about Dancing with the Stars, one of my all-time favorites. But until then, I will see you on the flip side. Love, peace, and hair grease, and I'll see you next week. Bam!
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.